It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Welcome to Operation Earth, comedians chatting about climate change. I am Dr. Matt Winning. I'm an environmental researcher and stand-up comedian. I've been doing both of those for over a decade now. Basically, what I used to do was do comedy to kind of lighten my mood and tried not to think about the impending doom of the planet. But now I think it's time to talk about it and actually address it head on. So every week I have a different special guest and we chat about news stories. We will go through a carbon footprint calculator, see how green they are. Basically, like in Top Gear, where, you know, they have like who's the fastest celebrity, we're going to find out who the greenest one is. It's basically a podcast for people who care about our climate emergency but aren't doing much about it. This is for you. Hi, so this week's episode is with Sophie Hagen. She is a Danish comedian, writer, podcaster. She does it all. Yeah, it was really fascinating. Sophie and I have known each other for a while, but I guess mostly just seen each other at gigs and stuff like that. So it's nice to actually sit down and have a proper lengthy chat, essentially. So yeah, it was great, and I hope you enjoy it.
Ooh, so, that's red.
You're joining us. We've just gone through a footprint calculator with Sophie Hagen. Hagen?
Yes, Hagen.
Hagen. Great. Hagen.
Well, for this one, let's just call me Evelyn Mark.
And Sophie's footprint has come out at about 208% of the target for by the UK government. So it is.
I don't even know what that means. Oh, it just looks really bad.
It looks bad, but we'll try and roughly find out what it means. Okay, 20.2 tons.
Okay, it's what costing the world.
Yeah, this is what you're costing the world. So the UK average, I think, is about 13.
I'm worse than people.
You're worse than most people.
Worse than most people.
I wouldn't say you're worse than most people.
Just didn't you?
In this specific context. And it breaks
my powers for good.
It breaks it. Yeah, you're doing other good in other areas.
I'm taking the train to a place where I do good.
Yeah. You're helping other people.
But it's fine. I'm facing it.
You're not looking after yourself. That's the thing. You're looking,
that's true.
So it breaks it down roughly into travel, home, food, and stuff. And I'd say your food's actually pretty low. It's like 16% of your footprint. Travel's 44%.
Yeah.
And I'd say that. It's probably going to be quite typical of a lot of comedians.
Yeah.
Because we kind of have to travel.
Who's not from the UK as well.
So you've got like this double thing where it's like, you don't, you know, your family and lots of other people you know come from.
And a whole career in another country as well.
Exactly. A career somewhere else that you have to go and travel. So it's not like you know, it's difficult because you're time constrained as well. It's not like you can be like, okay, I'm going to take. I looked into going to Copenhagen this year by train.
It's like 24 hours.
24 hours,
and you have to change like four times in various cities and stuff. And it would just,
because
I would do it. Because I hate flying now so much.
Okay.
So I would love to go by train anywhere. I took the plane to, no, it wasn't even Brussels. It was some place in the Belgium or something.
Somewhere in Belgium,
And I just hated the, I ended up taking the train home because I was like, this is so much nicer.
Oh, it's so much better.
Yeah.
It's really good, but it's just that you want it to be as quick as possible, and it's that trade-off, isn't it?
I'm okay with time on trains. Yeah. I'm okay
That's
with
good.
It.
Yeah.
Especially if I don't, because I hate the queuing for flights and the security check and packing for flights. And
it's the most stressful. I find airport, like actually flying isn't that bad. It's the stress of everything else involved with it. Yeah. It's so much
getting to an airport and oh my God, the whole thing is horrible.
Yeah,
it's just going to a train station, getting on a train is so nice.
Just walk on a train.
I would always do that if I could.
If the option is there.
The one was a ferry to Denmark. I would have loved that. Yeah. And also I'm going to Ireland soon.
Okay.
And I've made them pay for the ferry instead of the. I don't know if that's better environmentally.
Oh, it is. Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah,
but I was like, why wouldn't you take the train to whatever Liverpool or wherever it is and then take the ferry? Oh, it'll take like 1 or 2 hours more, but not much more.
But it's not much more, yeah.
You get to be on a boat.
Yeah. Well, how often do you get to be on a boat?
Exactly.
In this modern world.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just,
Oh, so travel is one of those things where I couldn't cut it down if I wanted to.
You need to do the travelling.
Yeah, I never travel. I very rarely travel for fun. My fun is not travelling.
You're just staying where you are. I know how you feel with that. On a much smaller scale, like because of work during the week at university and commute 2 hours every day on the weekends, people are like, oh, do you want to come and like play football for an hour at the other side of London? And I'm like, I'm not leaving small vicinity. I might leave my flat and I might walk for 5 minutes somewhere and then I'm returning to exactly so that I don't have to move at all.
It's just so much. And also as a fat person, like just navigating the world of travel is so tiring. Every seat and, you know, people looking and, you know, are they taking pictures of you trying to fit into a seat? And there's so much psychological exhaustion to do with any kind of travel.
Yeah.
So if I cannot travel,
it would be better. I've
even cut down on my, you know, going back to Denmark thing. You know, it's difficult because there's career and family and, you know, Christmas and birthdays and stuff. But even that, I'm going back way less than I usually do.
Way less than you usually would. Yeah. Okay.
Probably would have been higher like a year ago.
Oh, yeah.
My travel footprint.
Footprint stuff. Would you say if you had to travel, train would be the way you'd prefer to travel?
Like, I think I prefer cars. Well, car in, you know, so like for touring, I prefer a nice support act and then we drive somewhere.
Right.
Because that's, you know, there's no anxiety about that.
Yeah.
It's just me and a friend. And that's lovely and nice.
Great.
But if not, you know, Uber cabs and stuff, that's still a bit stressful, I think.
Yeah.
Someone else
you don't know. Yeah.
All of that. But yeah, I think I prefer car to train to plane.
Yeah.
Ferry to everything.
If you could ferry everywhere.
I just go on a boat everywhere. Yeah, yeah. I prefer that.
It's the one that you do the least with people. Yeah, you're just like, oh, this is exciting.
Yeah. And in Denmark, bicycle, but not in the UK.
Yeah, Copenhagen. I mean, I think the first time I went to Copenhagen was like 2004, and I was just like, everybody's on a bike.
Everyone.
It's incredible.
It's so nice. And I didn't appreciate it enough, and I'm sorry. God, I paid £190 rent a month. To live in my own tiny one bedroom, but my own little kitchen and my own little bathroom.
Yeah.
Still bigger than the one bedroom I have now. Like a grand or whatever. And I could ride my bicycle into central Copenhagen in 7 minutes.
Amazing.
I was on the ninth floor. I had a view of the city. I did not appreciate it.
And everybody seems to know what they're doing on the bikes in Copenhagen as well. Everybody's just like, oh, yes, this is what we do.
Designated paths. You don't, like in London, when you just go in between cars and, I mean, it's so
terrifying.
Stressful. Yeah, it looks dangerous.
I've never ridden a bike in London.
No, I would never.
So frightened.
It looks terrifying.
I've driven once or twice in central London where I've had to, and it's the worst thing in the world.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm scared in a car. I can't imagine driving in a bike.
Yeah. Well, I drove with a Canadian, his first car ride in London. He got stuck in a roundabout for about 18 minutes. He was just like, I couldn't do it. And we're like, next time you're going to get off, right? Yeah. Oh no, missed it again.
Yeah.
He just couldn't get off. He was so scared.
It's terrifying. But then I can't imagine London's probably not even anywhere near as bad as a lot of really busy, if you go to Spain and places where people drive crazy, you're just like, I can't.
Yeah, it's hard to really drive crazy in London because you're just standing still all the time.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about... So we went through your carbon footprint, which is, we said was about roughly about 20 tonnes.
Yeah.
So you've just moved into a new flat.
I just got a new flat,
by yourself.
Yes.
So you're the one person flat.
Yes.
And you're enjoying it?
Yeah, it's the best thing I've ever done. Yeah. Apart from buying the slow cooker, it's the best thing I've done for myself.
Have your own flat and a slow cooker and you're
I've never
just
been
happy.
Happier. I never want to leave the flat. I never want to go outside. If I liked cats, I would get 18 cats and just be inside all the time and I'd be happy for the rest of my life. It's so good. It's so, so good. I'm 30. It's the first time I've lived alone.
Okay.
It shouldn't be like this.
No, I had
my tiny dorm thing that I talked about in Copenhagen.
Right.
Still had.
It was
like a dorm thing. So there's still people around.
It's
me,
not quite the same.
Not quite the same.
And now, okay. So, and food. So we're going to talk about food. So you said you have meat in every meal and a slow. Right. So the slow cooker, do you use that quite a lot?
I think I do.
Yeah. That's cool.
I am very into it.
So that's good. I mean, I don't know. I know nothing about slow cookers. So I'm.
I don't know either.
But I just
assume it's bad.
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. It's the thing about, for me, it's just that you can get up in the morning when you have the most energy.
Yeah.
Put everything into a pot.
Yeah.
Turn it on.
Yeah.
And then do all the cleaning because you have the most energy to clean up all the things you've used to make the food. And then you do whatever you need
disappear.
To do for the rest of the day. And
Got
then when
you.
You're ready, mm-hmm. when you're hungry at night and you have no energy and you're tired and you're just starving, you just pour it into a dish and then
it's
you eat
delicious.
It.
Delicious.
And it's so good. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's just the perfect kind of
This is a great
allocation of energy.
Did anyone teach you this or did you just decide that this was a good idea? Because it seems like a really logical thing to do that most people should do their cooking.
But I think I just got into cooking.
Right.
And I don't even know. I think it's because I've hated cooking for so long.
Yeah.
Mainly because I lived with people and, you know, the kitchen didn't feel like a nice, not like it felt like a bad place.
Yeah.
But it was a communal
not
space.
Not your space.
Yeah, it wasn't my space. So you never knew if someone was going to come in. And, you know, you kind of, if you're in your own world and you're like, I'm just going to stand here and do some cooking. And then someone is suddenly there and you have to do small talk or you have to kind of wake up and not just be like.
And then you're having to talk to people, whatever it is. Because sometimes cooking is really nice. I quite enjoy it when I'm just like, I'll focus on that.
Yeah, exactly. And you're listening to a podcast.
Yeah, listen to something. And cook, chop someone, whatever it is.
Oh, it's so therapeutic in many ways. But then I got into it about a year ago, and I don't even remember how I just bought a slow cooker, and I was just so happy.
That's cool. That's great.
It just fits in with, because I get easily stressed. I have loads of psychological stuff happening.
Right.
So part of me is, you know, this, having to put everything in the pot at the same time, and the onions are ready.
And then you're done,
and it's all a mess, and then you eat it, and then you don't want to clean up.
That's the worst part.
It's the worst part. You don't
it's
want to do
like
it after you've eaten.
You've just spent ages creating something.
Yeah.
You've then consumed the thing, and now it's like the worst part, which is like having to clean up after yourself has to happen.
And you forget how good it was to eat it. You're like, no, but now it's gone, so what am I doing this for?
Yeah, people with dishwashers are,
God.
I mean, I'm jealous of them.
I've never had one. Like I've never lived in a house that had a dishwasher.
But then you don't know what you're missing. So it's fine.
Yeah.
You don't ever
but
think
I'm
about it.
I'm also always one person. It's very rare that I cook for people.
Yeah.
So it would take me, I don't think I have enough stuff to fill a dishwasher.
Well, it doesn't make sense. If you're by yourself, there's no reason to do it.
Exactly.
You just clean up that
so
one.
So it's never been, I can imagine if I had
actually, you're doing
a
good,
whole family and stuff, it would be.
It might be, So in terms of, like, do you think you waste less food because you're using a slow cooker? Do you think you make, like, do you keep eating the stuff afterwards? So, like, if you made enough and you eat it and you go, okay, there's a bit left over, will you then keep that?
Yeah, so I will keep, I usually will keep. So what I'm trying, is because I'm, not just because I've moved house, but also just because I'm becoming more of a human.
Yeah.
Becoming better at being a human.
Yeah.
And trying to be more, because the thing that's happened now is that I've realized that I don't think I've ever actually taken out the bins.
Yeah, okay.
I realized that because I just realized how much I have to take out the bins. And I was trying to think back, like, when have I taken out? And there must have just always been someone in whatever house I've lived in
who
just took out
the
bins.
Yeah.
And I've always kind of known that I didn't like it, and I've always tried to do people's extra dishes, just like
to make up for it.
I'll be the person to buy the toilet paper. I'll be the person to do this thing.
Yeah.
But now I have to take, because no one's doing
You're
it for
control,
me.
Yeah.
So now I'm very aware of what I throw out, because I don't want it. I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
But also just, I had so few skills taught by my mother.
Yeah.
It's kitchen house things. Mm-hmm. She just doesn't really care about those things.
Yeah.
So I'm learning it now, I feel.
Yeah.
A lot of these things, just like the most basic, how do you do this?
I do,
How does this work?
Yeah.
The most basic things, like the washing machine drawer.
Yeah.
What goes in what drawer? The fabric softener and the pre-wash and the thing.
Yeah.
Just haven't. I'm 30. Didn't know. Didn't know. Had to ask people.
Yeah, I mean, it's, Google's good for that as well now.
Yeah.
You can just, people are kind of like, I don't need to know this. I'll just, when something comes up, I'll just ask some random person on the internet or like look up a manual or whatever it is.
I'm more like an Instagram story kind of person where I'm like, I don't know how this works. And a lot of nice people just message me and say, well, I'll tell you about it.
That is the handy part of having people that, people follow you. So you're just like, I'm just going to ask all these people who'll probably respond very quickly.
So nice.
You don't want them to respond to lots of other, message
only when I want you to.
Yeah. Just when you're having an issue, you'd like them to tell you how to put the fabric softener in.
But when they're like, oh, hey, I have it, shh.
Yeah.
I didn't speak to you.
I don't have time for you. So we were also going to talk a little bit about in the home. So you're now by yourself in the home. You said that you keep things fairly warm because your mum used to never...
Yeah, I have issues with light and coldness.
Okay.
So my mum likes the dark.
The dark.
The coldness and the darkness.
Right.
So it's very much my mother sitting in a dark room in the corner in her winter coat.
Amazing.
And me just a furious teenager on the couch, freezing, wanting light. So I'm bad with light is probably one of the things I use a lot of, whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
I like have as much... Also, the place where I am... My window leads out to a wall, so I don't get a much of light. I just like brightness. It cheers me. It doesn't cheer me up, but of course it affects your brain.
It affects you.
I have one of those. What's it called? Not anti-depression.
The little
sad lamps. SAD lamps.
Is it like a thing that you put like you kind of look at?
A light bulb.
Oh, the light bulbs.
You can get in your ceiling, a ceiling lamp, a light bulb. I don't think it's the same one as the one you can stare at, but it's sort of the same effect.
So
it's like a different kind of light, but you can feel like you turn on the light and you're just happier, you have more energy.
It'll make such a difference.
Yeah, so I'm very much into that's a priority for me, light.
Lots of light.
And then warmth is just, I hate being cold and I've just always been cold. I hate it. I have a heating blanket.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
One of the ones that... Oh, you put in your bed?
Like under my sheet.
Oh.
And I'm sorry, but...
That's... Yeah, I don't...
Next to my slow cooker.
Yeah. I think those are, like, to me, they're not far off the whole... when people have those, like, pubs, they have, like, an outdoor heater where you're essentially just trying to heat the entire planet with... It's the most inefficient waste of everybody's time.
Oh, you think the blankets are?
But the blankets, I don't think they're quite as bad, but it's also, like... the bed will warm up, but people like that sort
I see what you mean. I think, I think the radiator works. So compared to where I lived before, I think the radiator...
Yeah.
I think I'd have to have it on for hours before I could feel it, and that feels too much for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Even for me, who's like...
I guess you've moved into this new place kind of when it's getting a bit warmer now, so
it's still freezing.
Is it still cold?
Yeah, so I need to figure out what...
coming in.
Yeah, so I'm kind of becoming my mother now. I can feel like I could just wear something warm. I'm like, what is happening? Because all of a sudden, I pay the bills as well, I don't just give money to a housemate and go fix it for me, right?
Yeah.
So now I'm actually looking at how much I'm spending, and I'm becoming my mother now. But I think the heating blanket is just this, because I'm freezing and I'm so cold and I have my winter duvet and I have my pajamas, I have full pajamas, and I'm still freezing.
Cold,
and then turning that on and then waiting 10 minutes and then getting into bed.
Yeah,
my God,
makes a
the joy. Yeah. But I don't, apparently a lot of people, I found out, leave it on all night. Don't do that.
That's fine.
But that is, again, paranoia, not me being a good person. I'm like, I will burn to death.
Yeah. Sometimes it's good to have the paranoia.
Sometimes paranoia saves the planet.
I think absolutely, So there is a recent study which showed that air pollution in cities tends to basically make people stupider, which I think is really fascinating. So there was a study showing that the worse the air is and the longer you spend in that sort of environment, your brain stops working and things start going and your cognitive ability reduces. So I think it was a study showing that globally the atmosphere has about 410 parts per million of carbon dioxide. which is what we're all breathing in, but different room, you know, depending on where you are, we might have more carbon dioxide. And at like double that, so about 900, the brain, the ability of the brain to function reduces by about a fifth. And there's like studies which have shown that classrooms around different places that in heavily polluted areas have more, like even higher than that. So like kids are trying to learn in places that are essentially stopping them being able to use their brain properly. Do you feel stupider?
I think the human tendency is to say, I mean, because that's what I feel like saying, you know, you can feel it. You can feel the difference between how you function in, you know, in a nature-y place that isn't a city.
Yeah.
But that could just as easily be your own imagination or, you know, for other reasons. I don't know if you can actually feel your own cognitive
thing. I mean, it would be
thing. You know what I mean, right?
No, you're not going to be able to do that. But you can maybe notice your own mental health or whatever, or breathe, that you're breathing or whatever is better.
You can taste it almost.
Yeah,
You know, like Copenhagen feels... It's still a city.
Yeah.
But I can feel the... This is less stressful.
Yeah.
You know, but again, that's probably not what...
No. But I think it's related to it, because there's a lot of studies out there showing how, like, I can't remember exactly. I'll try and find a link to this to stick in. But people talked about how there's obviously like a lot worse crime in cities and tends to be more of mental health issues. But actually, it's not that the cities are bad. It's that the countryside is so good for your mental health, and you know that it really helps to be in the countryside.
Yeah.
That not having that is what's causing the other things to go. So it's like we aren't designed essentially to live in cities.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because you need to see green and you need a certain amount of air or whatever.
I've lived in a where I lived before I moved was like in a kind of a flat above a shop. You know, so we didn't have a balcony, we didn't have a garden, we just had the flat. Regular things to do, and there wasn't really the parks in London are overcrowded, it doesn't feel parky.
I don't know, so London's actually supposed to have like the most parks of any city, but I still don't feel
exactly. And you're in a park, but then you can hear the cars driving like 2 meters away from you.
Exactly.
I don't feel nature-y.
There's only have you been to Hampstead Heath, which is like kind of north.
I don't think I have.
It's the only place I've found in London that you can sort of walk far enough into it to feel like you can't hear any city noises.
That sounds magical.
And it's really
good. Because I found the last two summers, I felt like almost ill with like desperation to be outside. But every time I went outside, there'd be so many people and sounds. And I was so desperate to like a cabin in the woods. I was like, I just need to go to a cabin in the woods. I need to go away.
Yeah.
And it was a physical and a psychological desperation to not be trapped like in my little room. And I just needed to be outside, but not with people. And just, it was impossible.
Yeah. You can't,
It just wasn't there.
You just kind of feel
and
like...
I was looking at Airbnb to try and find... any house in London where I could spend 24 hours where there was a garden. I was like, you're not, maybe I am being stupider because I was considering this.
Shows how desperate you clearly were.
Well, I'm sharing a garden with like my neighbor, but it looks like no one's ever been there.
Oh, wow. Is it one of those
The weeds
ones?
Are like up to my shoulders.
Maybe
like,
you'll get really into gardening now.
I was thinking about it today. I was looking at
like cool.
lawnmowers and stuff. That's going to be my new investment.
Tipping points. Environmental tip of the week. Why not go back in time and kill yourself before you were born? Environmental tip of the week. Tipping points.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So yes, so for you,
I don't care.
You don't really care about climate change,
do you? I don't care about climate change, I really don't.
You were brought to my show last year.
I was.
By a friend.
Mark Watson,
by
yeah.
Mark Watson.
And he also had to deal with me afterwards asking the same questions I asked you.
Oh yeah?
And it's not that I want the world to end. I don't want the world, the earth to explode. I know, and also it's not that I don't believe it.
Yeah.
I'm 100% on board with this. This is a thing that's happening and it's urgent and we're all going to die and it's going to be horrible. I just don't have the empathy or the sympathy, or it doesn't affect my emotions in any way. You know, I started out working for UNICEF, then I worked for Danish Refugee Council, I worked for Save the Children, you know, I went into activism and, you know, feminist activism and body, you know, so it's not that I don't care about people or the, you know, causes or making the world a better place.
Yeah.
Climate, it just bores me.
It's so funny.
I'm so bored by it.
But I'm so glad that you're on the podcast because it's a voice that we don't hear about. It's
not
only
popular, is it?
Yeah. The only I've never heard really anyone on anything about climate change that doesn't care about climate change. And actually, I'm sure you're, you know, a reasonably large part of the population. You're not going to be the only person out there.
Yeah, because it's so boring because we can't, because it's hard to make sexy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really hard to... I discovered the organization called... So they've made, because of all the plastic in the oceans, there's so much plastic in the oceans now that there's enough that if you gathered all of it, it would make a small country.
Yeah.
It was big enough that you could become a country. So they've applied. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Okay, yeah.
So they've applied to become a real country.
Oh,
and
wow,
I think they might
that.
Have been. Oh, and yeah. The idea is that... If this, I think the idea is that if this country is part of the EU or UN or something like that, then the other countries have the responsibility to clean it up or something like that. And I was like, that is such a cool way of making something
interesting,
but also fuck us all for needing a big stunt like that to suddenly care. And that's sort of where I'm at. I'm like, not everyone can care about everything.
Exactly, yeah.
But I'm annoyed that we need to care in order to do things.
Yeah.
Right? So I can't expect just like a random person in the street, which is where I did my job for UNICEF, was in the street. I can't expect to stop people and then suddenly, I got such hard work to make people go, but imagine, think about it. Yeah. What if it was you? What if it was your child? What if it was, it could happen here. It could happen. Okay, imagine a country. Imagine this. Try it, holding your breath for 40 seconds. That's how it's going to feel underwater, but forever, you know. It's such hard work to get one person to say, yeah, but also I have a pizza in the oven, so I might just, you know. Where actually, fuck if you care or not, you know? Still do. I'm so bored by climate change. It's a boring topic. I hate it.
Yeah. Great.
But of course. But it doesn't mean that shouldn't
recycle.
Yeah. You know? It's responsibility. Yeah. We're not just ourselves, you know? I'm not going to be I'm privileged enough that I'm not going to be the very first victim of this.
Yeah.
So who cares if I care? Yeah. That doesn't matter. I shouldn't be caring in order to do good things. Doesn't that annoy you? Doesn't it annoy you that you have to be like...
It takes a lot of effort, yeah.
Doesn't it?
And it's weird because it's such a big problem that is going to actually impact everything in everybody's lives in the future.
Mm.
Like, it's the way of describing it, it's like, it's not like this thing anymore that is an environmental issue, right?
Mm.
Which is what it's been, the messaging has been such... Like, that's how it feels to most people. To you, probably, it feels like climate change is this thing that's over there and it's not going to affect you so much. Or, as you say, you're not going to be the first victim. So you can go, okay, I don't need to... I can compartmentalize this.
Yeah,
and it's not going to... Yeah, and you go, well, I'll not think about it. But then in 20 years time or whatever, you know, you're not going to be not affected by it when every, you know, second summer is so hot that you're having to, you know, change your sheets every second night, or you're having to buy extra air conditioning to deal with how hot it is in the summer, or, you know, all of these things that are actually going to affect, like, the price of this is going to go up.
My grandma drops dead because it's too hot.
She's
97.
Stuff like that. Like, it is going to totally affect you, but it's easy for people to feel like it's... To me, it feels like people... It's easier for people to feel like it's not going to affect them so much, or that even then, because it's not right now in your face, you can ignore it for a bit or whatever. So, yeah, I think it's just really good to talk to more people that feel that way, and for other people who feel that way to sort of express how they feel. And
But I think it's also important that we just kind of get it away from the feelings of, you know, I'm... Because when I worked with these charity organizations, and also sometimes in my work now when I do activism, I'm so bored. You know, sometimes, you know, so people will always start out with the emotions and go, there is this issue. And, you know, you might have all these statistics about other horrible things in your head, and you've done all these interviews and it's all very dark in your head. And then someone goes, there's also this thing. And sometimes I want to go, okay, what do I, just tell me what to do. Yeah. Where to send the money, what to sign. I don't want to know.
I don't have the capacity.
I don't have the capacity. I can't care about this next. And yes, it is probably the most important thing in the world.
Yeah, but just give me some...
Something to sign.
To do, yeah.
Yeah, because I don't, you know, and often the people who then want you are so relieved because they don't have to go through the whole emotional story of how and why I should sign this and stuff. And you can see that, you know, they have to talk to so many people who have all these excuses and why should I care? I save the animals. So why should I also, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing is, we're all affected by all of these things. You know, like, fat activism doesn't just affect fat people. It's literally every single person in the world. Racism, sexism, it's like thinking that sexism only affects women. It affects everyone because toxic masculinity kills mostly men, etc.
Got you.
So, but it is true. It's this idea that, well, it's not me and it's not right now.
Yeah.
And I can't see it. I found the anxiety when it was getting really hot in, was it February?
Yeah.
And I could feel I was a bit scared. And I was like, you bloody hypocrite. You hypocrite. Now you're scared?
Yeah.
You only learned to recycle last year. Because your housemate knocked your door and said, can you start putting plastic in the main bin? And I was like, okay. And he said, can you recycle? And I said, can you quickly tell me what that is? Because no one had told me. And it's, again, not other people's responsibility to tell me. I just hadn't ever thought about... Then I had to tell my mom what it was, and she didn't understand it either. You know, like, I don't care. And I wish I didn't know it existed. Because it's so boring.
I mean, in a way, I also wish I didn't know it existed.
Right?
And I've spent
life better,
10 years thinking about it and then just getting slightly more depressed.
Right. It's tiring.
It's tiring.
So how do we fix it?
Take a holiday and then come back and then come back refreshed and then feel much better about it.
I thought I meant more like the environment, not your
mental health. Oh yeah, screw my mental health. How do we fix it?
Is there a way of doing it without having to convince people that it's gonna, because it's not working, you know? And then you can do 10 years of work, right, to convince, you probably helped convince a lot of people of this, right? And then you have Donald Trump speaking to billions of people saying, no, it's not a thing. And then the people, everyone who was just a bit on the edge.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I think the difference we're going to have now, you know, it's probably not a good thing to rely on this, but I think now people are feeling it happening.
Yeah.
As before, they were like, oh, we keep saying it's going to get really bad. It'll probably be fine. And now the things are beginning to kick in enough that so many people are actually can't, you know, sort of say it's not happening. And so the more that people are feeling it, the more people will be willing to actually do something about it. And it's a shame that it's taken 20 to 30 years longer, but it's just human, the way humans are.
You mean feeling it as in, like,
noticing it?
It being warm in February.
Yeah.
You don't mean, like,
exactly.
Yeah.
What you have noticed, it's taken you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's because you're just a human being you know, that's designed to deal with things, problems when they arrive, rather than, you know, stopping them happening in the first place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Around the same time, I thought you should probably open some savings or.
Yeah.
But
it's mad. It's mad. Yeah. Yeah. But it's incredible because I think so much of the stuff that's happened in the last year with people sort of beginning to protest more about climate change and the school strikes that the kids are going on and all that has come out of probably how warm it was last summer, because everyone went, oh, this is a bit much.
Yeah.
Maybe this is actually now happening. We should probably do something about this. At this point in the podcast, I'm trying to ask you... I'm trying to ask you if you've got anything you want to ask me.
I don't know if it's a question.
Okay.
But it's probably going to be a ramble.
That's absolutely
fine. And then I want to hear your thoughts.
What I think about it, yeah.
Because there's a few different kind of... So my whole thing... So my background is very much within... social justice activism.
Yes.
And particularly body politics, right?
Yeah.
And the main issue with body politics is that the focus has become on the people who've been the victims of this oppression, so more or less like fat people or anyone else who physically doesn't fit into society's norms.
Yes.
That is, you know, the focus is on body positivity and love your body.
Yeah.
Which means that there is no responsibility being put on the people who are actually doing this, who are creating the, you know, the social, the adverts, who are producing these body image, which harms children from the age of three, right? So the circle at the moment is 3-year-olds feel bad about themselves, then they feel bad until they're maybe 20, when they can get into body positivity, and then maybe they can fix themselves within 15 to 20 years by buying a lot of products to make themselves feel better and buying body positivity products, blah, blah, blah. But then there's a new generation, etc., right?
Yeah.
So the big, what's missing from that is accountability. So with my work, I often ask the question, why are we talking about this? Why am I talking to other fat people about how we can love ourselves when what we should be doing is talk to the companies, the Weight Watchers companies, the diet companies that make these products that don't work, etc. So that's my background for this question, because
I think
when I watched your amazingly funny and great show, it was so good. My big kind of thought that I kept thinking was this, oh my God, you're doing so much work, right? You're doing so much work in your work and also in comedy.
Yeah.
Of trying so hard to make people change their ways and try and reduce their whatever it's called, carbon footprint.
Yeah.
Whilst all these companies are doing nothing, you
yes.
know? And I wonder if it's the same, if there's the same problem within your job.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, how sustainable is it?
Yeah.
Or why is it sustainable to make people change their ways individually?
Got you. And I think that's such a really good analogy. I don't know if it's an analogy or a metaphor or a similarity between the two things. Absolutely. And actually, yeah, I think there's a really fascinating angle on it. And I've never really joined the dots with those and thought, oh, they're actually quite similar. Because what you have there is people... it being pushed onto people to change or for us to as individuals to deal with. And it's like this, the world we live in now is very much about like, it's so much about individualism that the solutions always feel like they have to be individualist as well.
Well,
so the show that you saw of mine was a show that was very much focused on like personal accountability and like what you can do as an individual. But the one thing, so I'll slightly defend it, but then also I don't think, like, you're 100% right as well. So the show went through like what are the top things as an individual you can do, and I had someone come up to me after a preview of that show as well, just a guy, I can't remember exactly where it was, and he was like, oh, you know, that was great, but the problem isn't individuals, it's companies. And I was like, absolutely is as well, but the problem is when I'm doing comedy about it, I'm not performing to like a company where I can then tell them what they can do. Like, you have to give people control and agency over what
autonomy
they can do,
yeah,
which is why then I've tended to do that so far with talking about climate change to people, but I now totally think that the next thing to do is to try to talk more about how do you then try to change the accountability of the people who are profiting from this or who are causing the issue much earlier on in the process, which is exactly the same as what you were talking about. So you need to somehow put stuff in place, and that, I guess a lot of that's going to be through government action, and also people get groups getting together to put pressure. But it's a lot more about kind of collective action, because you could all write individually to companies to try to get them to stop, but if you bring enough people together who all use that product, then there's all it's a lot easier to harness that power of like a group to change.
It all stems from companies and rich people wanting to get richer and make more money, but the people who become the victims, both of the climate being fucked up, to use them.
That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
But also of people's reaction to it, become the people who are the same people.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so weird how, I bet if how many people would meet someone at a event who was, I'm basically the person who unleashes plastic into the oceans.
Yeah.
How many people would think that was, cool job, and then turn to someone with a plastic straw and be like, oh, you're a horrible person. You know, it's such a strange dynamic.
Absolutely. And no, I think you've really raised, like, which is a lot of people in the sort of climate world talk about as well. It's like, actually it's the source of the problem is a few companies, and they need to change. But then getting them to change is so difficult because everybody else in the world down the line from them is connected in different ways to that problem. And so, you know, people, if tomorrow you stopped, if you just banned like petrol, like, okay, you would stop that like tailpipe sort of thing where it's coming out, but also then people don't have any fuel for their cars. The solutions have to be like,
only ban the rich. That's the solution. It's like destroy capitalism. But I mean, now it's getting heated, but you know what I mean?
The
solution is to go, well, just the rich people then.
Yeah.
Just the companies. Well,
the freedom. Yeah, those companies need to be putting, it needs to be like regulated properly so that they're investing.
That's a much nicer way of saying
enough. Or enough of their, so like you have to have targets there to wind down what they're doing. And what you want to do is you want to do it in a way that is fair and just for people, so that lots of people don't just lose their jobs. But on the other hand, if it's too far in the future, then they just go, well, we'll not do it. We'll not worry about this just now. And so it's, I think at the moment we're at a stage where it's like government and the public need to start putting real pressure on companies and say, well, this, you have to do that. This is what's happening now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for demolishing all capitalism, but then, and it's kind of, the reason I thought of this because of the news story you had about the air pollution making, and it's so easy to, I think that's one of the ways they try to keep control is by making everything that points out their hypocrisy sound like a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
But it's so easy to see how that really benefits them.
Yeah.
That everyone gets stupider. That really benefits them. Even if I'm not saying that they're necessarily
it's polluting not intentional.
The air. But they're also not trying to stop it because it's not, maybe not just because, but this is a good thing for them.
Yeah.
That we're all getting poorer, that we're all blaming each other, that we're all getting stupider.
Yeah.
It's really good for them. It's good for the right-wing parties. It's good for everything that's bad, basically, all the bad stuff, the capitalism, the fascism, the Nazis, that they're really thriving off of a system where the most vulnerable get blamed and are the victims of most of it, and the rich people just get richer.
Yeah.
I know, and again, I know how this sounds to someone who's not living in this bubble of social justice warrior life that I'm constantly in on social media and amongst my friends and stuff, but that's part of how they win, is because then I now sound crazy, but
yeah.
I'm also not wrong.
Yeah, no, totally. Oh, well, thanks so much for this. I think it's been really interesting chat. I think I've actually now realised how much more we have in common.
Yeah, that's
true.
Which
is good. Like, I feel like, oh, great, yeah, there's someone doing this other thing that's sort of similar-ish.
I think we all have the same.
Yeah, oh, that's great.
Same enemies.
Oh, do you want to plug anything?
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, I have a podcast called Made of Human.
Yeah, Made of Human.
Which is a chatty chat.
Great
podcast where I talk to comedians and, well, everyone, activists and stuff, about life. And then I have a comedy podcast called Secret Dinosaur Cult, which is mainly just funny and weird about daddy issues and trauma and dinosaurs.
Is there dinosaurs in it?
We do talk about, we have a dinosaur per episode, but we use it as an excuse to talk about trauma, basically.
Wow.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense. I have a book out called Happy Fat, which is partly about, you know, the body activism bit of the whole thing, which is also... You know, there's a chapter called How to Love Your Body. So it's the same thing of being both talking to the individual, but also trying to focus on, the same thing you talk about with your show. You're trying to do both in a way. Both things are important in their own ways. And I'm doing a new show in Edinburgh this year.
What's it called?
It's called The Bum Swing.
The Bum Swing.
Yeah.
I like that.
Thank you.
That's a good name.
Yeah, well, sophieagan.com and some social media. So being with an F. Yeah.
Super.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
So, that was Sophie Hagen and me having a lovely chat about climate change. She has got some dates coming up of her new tour at the Soho Theatre. The show's called Sophie Hagen, The Bum Swing. And she's doing it at the Edinburgh Festival as well, at the Pleasance Dome. And I hope you enjoyed the episode. What else am I doing? You can still get tickets to my Edinburgh Festival show, Matt Winning, It's the End of the World as We Know It. Subscribe to the podcast, that'd be great. Rate and subscribe to us on iTunes, that would be so helpful for us. And this podcast was produced and edited by Emma Corsham. The music was done by Daniel Drever, and it was given a nice little logo by Chumchi Design. So yeah, use all those people. Thanks very much, and we'll speak to you soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.